Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the March 31st UTC session of Tangerine SDR on TimeSpeak. My name is Dave, KV0S, and this week I've been doing some programming and getting back into Go programming and catching up with that. Been working with Dave Witten a bit on both the magnetometer and some other projects he and I have been interested in. So that's about it. Next on the list, we have Mike, AAAK, shown as recording and Mike muted. And we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.tangerinesdr.com. Next on the list, we have Nathaniel, W2NAF. Go ahead, Nathaniel.
Good evening, Dave. Thank you very much for having us tonight. It's good to be here. Everything is fine in Scranton. I am still at the computer that I was at during the HamSci workshop last weekend, and I'm getting to use Zoom a whole lot more. We had our first day of remote teaching today. So I taught two classes by Zoom. I've been using my little iPad with the pencil as an online tablet to write down equations and things like that. And just trying to keep up with research and all these other things. W2NF, back to net.
Very good. That's a clever idea of using a tablet with a writable tablet surface. That would be great. Next on the list is Tom, N5EG. Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, good evening, Dave. Good evening to everybody in the group. Not too busy this week. We did a few reviews of the receiver circuit board. It seems to be getting close. Scotty is trying to get some final tweaks between how the receiver marries up to the data engine in, and then hopefully we can wrap up the receiver pretty soon. And also have been using Zoom quite a bit, 4 or 5 meetings this week, so the tool seems to be taking over quickly. Back to the group.
Fine business. And next on the list is Scotty, WA2DFI. Go ahead, Scotty.
All right, thanks, Dave. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, just fine.
Okay, wasn't sure as if burying quicksand of computer equipment around here. So anyway, thank you very much again for doing yeoman service on keeping TeamSpeak alive. And just got an order from our illustrious governor here that we are now effective tomorrow at close of business. We're under a stay-at-home order. So not really going to affect me much since I pretty much have done that anyway in response to all this hysteria going on. So anyway, we did, like Tom said, we did a little bit of work on the receiver. I think the layout guy is pretty much done with it. We're probably going to end up with another real quick review meeting just to take a final look at what he did, because he moved some traces between layers and did some length matching. And then they worked a little bit on the pinout of the clock module. I think we've got that to the point where, while the pins may not be locked down by number, I think we've got everything that we need on the connector. So that should allow me to finish up the data engine and get that into layout so that we can start getting closer to having real boards. I guess that's it for the other news for today. I'll turn it back over to Dave.
Well, fine business. This is exciting that we're getting close to starting to have some boards available, or at least for testing. Anyway, that brings us to the... Oh, next is Bill, AB4EJ. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks, Dave. Good evening to you and good evening to the group. Just a few notes. Did some work on unification of the configuration settings, the way its configuration is handled. You know, I have some code that's in C and some code that's in Python, so I have adjusted it now so both packages refer to the same configuration settings, which is a little bit unusual because typically the configuration in C is the configuration files are a little bit laid out a little bit different than Python, but I've got it set up. I wrote a package that now refers to them both. Both C and Python refer to the same configuration. There's just one thing that's the configuration in the C side. It points you to the Python configuration file, which seems a little kludgy, but it allows some flexibility in how you lay out the directory structure. Let's see. Doing some more work with getting the port set up so it conforms to the interface control document that Scotty and I have worked on, and should be ready to start testing with that a little bit later this week. Tomorrow we do have a team meeting to discuss where we are in the central control system. I'm sure the team has made absolutely no progress whatsoever because of the university has been shut down and spring break and all this and that. But I'm going to tell them tomorrow we need to do a little bit of something and not just let the whole project come to a dead stop until the fall. Otherwise, I'm going to have to start coding on some of that myself, as well as the Tangerine SDR stuff, to have any chance whatsoever of conforming to any kind of a schedule. Just by the way, if anything should happen to me, which is always a question these days because I am an older guy with health issues, I am posting the software to GitHub. So each time I make any significant changes to the software I've developed, most of which the stuff that you've seen, the simulation, and all of the stuff that runs on the Tangerine is all posted to GitHub. On another completely different note, I see that my FT8 signal earlier this week was copied in India, so that's pretty amazing. I've never thrown a signal to India before that I know of, certainly not in this solar cycle. So anyway, that's all I had. Back to Ned.
Have a quick question, Bill. Is it under Tangerine or under your own call sign?
It's both. I've got my repository AB4EJ1, I think, and then Tangerine SDR Notes is underneath that.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. Sorry, Bill. Oh, sorry, Scotty. I was going to just say that we're open for general discussion.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that maybe you put that up on our website, our webpage somewhere.
Yes, I can do that.
Is that okay, Bill?
You mean you're talking like a pointer to the repository? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just a note as to where it is so people can find it.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I just asked that not. I hope that other people won't start going and making a whole lot of changes because I have a lot of experience with other people putting stuff into a repository that doesn't compile and whatnot. I'm hoping I can work on this without a whole lot of other folks making changes if anybody makes changes, I'll hope that they will create a whole new branch and work on their own. But the thing isn't really ready for prime time yet. I'm just letting you guys know if I should go off the air then you'll know where to find the stuff.
Well, can't you lock it down from changes other than from your team?
Put it this way. I am not an expert with GitHub. I think it's set up that way now. I hope it is. So, but just in case I have not done something right.
Okay, Bill, this is Tom. I've found your GitHub repository, and I'll put the URL in the meeting minutes. And yeah, you should be required to approve any pull requests, so you should be in control of the code.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much.
Yeah, so the whole idea is to let everyone see it, but not, and if they want to make changes, they can pull a copy and make changes on that.
That'll work, yeah.
Well, Scotty, we're open for general discussion.
Okay, I think my rank's only private, though, so I'm not sure I have a lot to say.
I did get an email from Dave Witten. Apparently, none of his computers are getting on TeamSpeak right now. So I don't know what he did. Maybe he messed it up when he reconfigured for Zoom or something.
Or maybe he let them upgrade him.
Could be.
By the way, your audio is exceptionally clear and strong tonight.
Well, you know, during the time I've been fiddling with things, and I wasn't sure if that... actually, I installed a second TeamSpeak on another computer just in case I needed to switch, but you say this is working great.
Oh, it's awesome. In fact, you're about at least 3 dB louder than everyone else, and very clear. Even clearer than you were last week when you switched to the right mic.
Yeah, I remember Tom saying I sounded like I was in a closet or something, but it was the camera mic.
Oh, that was not the one you're using now. That was the one you used to use. It sounded like you were in a box.
Well, I did have for a while I was using a Heil mic, and that one you guys didn't like when I plugged it in, but I have a USB sound card, and that's what I used. I've used it on other things, and it comes across real clear going through that sound card and not the one that's built into the computer.
Well, I listened to you on the Zoom sessions for Hamsty, and I guess you're using that mic, and it sounded fine there.
Yeah, I think so.
So, I don't know. Anyway, one topic we could talk about is I'm looking forward to Field Day this year. I believe most Field Day groups are going to be canceled.
Is there a situation, like, for example, next weekend is Missouri QSO party is supposed to be next weekend. And what they told people to do was they changed the rules for our state QSO party so that people could work at home. But as long as they identified as being part of a club, they could then combine the scores.
Oh, okay. Because don't you normally for the QSO party operate single op and then do a aggregate club score?
Yes, but for like the state QSO party, that we did it so that people could do the distancing part and not have to. I mean, it's more fun to come together, but in the way things are, you want to stay separated, but still, it's a fun thing to do when you're at home in the shack.
Yeah, but I can see what's going to happen at Field Day. There's going to be a preponderance of Class E and D stations because the groups just won't be able to get together.
Yes.
So I thought, well, this would be a good time to try out some SDRs.
Yes, and we need to get Bill in there with his other modes.
So we need to hurry up and get a data engine and a clock module ready for Field Day.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're satisfied with it, I mean, that it's going to just be on a receiving basis. What are we going to do? Are we going to study propagation using the tangerine? Is that what you have in mind?
I'm not sure what I have in mind because we've been doing class 2A with a GOTA station and a VHF station for about 20 years. So we've got all of our equipment all in grab-and-go boxes, and everything's packed in a old school bus that we use for transport. So it's very easy for us to do Field Day every year. But the cabin that we normally do Field Day at is not going to be available this year. And even if it was, we probably wouldn't want to pack 20 people into such a small space. Would not be a wise thing to do. So, Field Day is probably going to be Class 1B up somewhere out in the woods, you know, camping. If not, it'd be Class 1D or 1E, probably 1E, home station with emergency power. But the original plan was to take the conventional radios and throw them away and use two separate radios, one set of radios for receive and one set for transmit. So you'd have a split the transmit and receive hardware into two. And, of course, the tangerine could act as the receive hardware. Or I have some IQ2s that I could use as transceive hardware, or use one as a transmitter and one as a receiver, which is much more likely. And then, but the problem is anything that runs protocol one won't work because you can't have two separate pieces of hardware and one receiver. So I'm kind of out of luck unless we get the new protocol running on the old hardware or on some hardware.
That's a bit of a tall order between now and field day, but I mean that's what, that's a couple months, or is it 3 months? When is field day? That's toward the end of June, isn't it?
End of June.
Yep, fourth full weekend in June. And so what I was thinking is, well, how could we, since it's such a big bite to take and just throw everything away and start over with SDRs, maybe the thing to do is to take our conventional radios and just set an SDR receiver next to them, turn the receiver off, use the rigs that we have for just for transmitters, and use the receiver and make the SDR a receiver and see how that works for 1 year. And then the next year we'll worry about the transmitters.
I like it. That sounds like, you know, if you've got some young folks that you're wanting to do some training to really give them a tremendous introduction to how a lot of the stuff works, that would be a great teaching tool.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of young people who are interested in field day and come up every year. We typically have between 25 and 30 people. But what we do is we clear out the living room floor of the cabin and we spread out sleeping bags, and that's the sleeping area. And we push the furniture all to the side. And then we move the kitchen to outdoors, so we have like a big barbecue grill and we do all the cooking outside. But I think this year it's probably just not wise to try to put, you know, 25 people all in such a small space. So I think it might be a good learning experience for a couple of them, but not for that many.
Yeah, I haven't heard our club say a word about field day. Our club is still struggling with the... They have a ham fest scheduled for May 2nd. They're still holding on to some faint hope that they're still going to have that. But I told them they wanted me to go. I was going to schedule to give a talk on FT8. I said, no, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah, that's. I think that this is going to peak sometime between April 1st and June 1st. So, and then we're not going to really start getting over it at any great extent until we're on the downward slope. Anyway, it's a great opportunity to clean your shack out and get your office, your home office set up and just get things squared away. That you're not, so like in my place, you're not sitting amongst a pile of junk trying to operate.
It hasn't really affected my operation that much. I mean, the kind of operation where you're supposed to work from home and all of that, I've been doing that myself for the last couple of years since I semi-retired from the university, that I've got permission to work at home, which I do 90% of the time, because so much of what I do, especially now, it's better done at home because I don't have to schlep Odroids and all that mess and spread it out on my desk. It's much better to have it here, because then if I want to, you know, hook up the Red Pitaya and suck in data from that and simulate getting data from the Tangerine and everything like that, I got the antennas and I got everything else. It's all here. My wife's having a little bit of a hard time because she is one of these people who thrives on social interaction. So, aside from talking on the phone for 4 hours a day, I can't be in the shack. That's all she can do. I can't be in the shack working on stuff all the time because she does need some tender love and care, to deal with all of this. Cause she's got some health issues. She's been dealing with lung issues since last September, not even related to this. So we got to make sure that she doesn't get this too, because it would wipe her out.
Yeah, and of course, you know, at ham radio, all of us are in the, not all of us, but most of us are in the prime age group for getting wiped out. So, and then you add any additional problems, it makes it just worse. And like Nathaniel, he's got a very young child, and certainly wouldn't want to expose him to it either. So we all have our problems here that, hopefully this thing is going to wind down and just be a memory by the fall.
You know, at a lot of hams, they're probably not working any different than you do. I mean, they want to talk on the air, sit at home and talk on the air all the time anyway. So they just get a chance to keep on doing what they're doing and get rewarded as if they're doing something good.
Well, that's what, there's been a bunch of memes going around on Facebook saying that Ham radio, social distancing before it was cool, or ham radio, social distancing for the last 100 years.
That's great. That's great.
That's right, like CW, the original digital mode.
Exactly.
And you would think, like, contests and things would be the perfect opportunity for us to get on and have fun and do just what we normally do without having to do anything special, and you're still safe.
Yeah, it's really nice. I'm picking up some good FT8 signals here. I don't really have... My antenna situation at this current location is really quite terrible. But I'm getting some FT8. I can receive all right. I can't really get out. But hopefully that will be changing in the future.
What do you have for an antenna?
So I have a shortened G5RV that is set up as a sloper pointing broadside into a hill.
Oh, so you warm the dirt.
Yes, it's a very warm dirt.
So how's the match on your transmitter to the antenna?
It's all right, I guess. I mean, I can press the auto tune button and it tunes up on 20 meters and not so much on 40 or 80, but it's okay. I honestly have not put a lot of time into it because it's just like it's not really a good situation. And as I said, I'm hoping that the situation will improve in the future, and I think there's a good chance it will.
Are you still looking at moving more rural?
Yeah, so we actually have an offer in on a house right now, and so far they have accepted the offer. So it's looking promising so far. So if everything goes right, we'll have a very nice piece of property that will be very good for HF antennas.
All right. Do you have some good trees?
28 acres of good trees.
That is outstanding. All
right. And no HOA.
100-foot tower coming your way.
It could be. And it's, you know, one of the highest elevations in the area. So, and it's adjacent to about 3,000 acres of game land, so it should be fairly RF quiet. So it's pretty much everything you'd hope an HF site to be, I think.
Well, cool. You can do deer scatter.
Yes, you could definitely do deer scatter.
But really, the best thing, if you get the tallest tree that's anywhere near your house, put up an inverted V in that. And I like inverted Vs for 40, and they work on 15 also. But 15 isn't very good these days. But you put up an inverted V and you get the apex up like 50, 60 feet, that antenna will work like magic.
And we'd be able to do that. I don't think putting a tower up would be in our budget immediately, but certainly doing all these wire antennas, there'd be lots of opportunity for that. And I know it will work way better than what I have here.
But if you have big trees, you can survive without a tower.
We have big trees.
I'm a big fan of inverted delta loops, which are about the size of a G5RV on top, and then they hang down in the middle, and I've had incredible luck with those.
So is it a flat across the top and angles down to the feed point, or the top is at a point?
The top is flat, and then... The feed point is the two diagonal or the apex of the triangle pointing down.
So the feed point's close to the earth, next to you, and then okay, so that's pretty cool. And those work?
Yeah, it works very well. And really, your feed point only needs to be about 20 feet off the ground.
So how high does the top have to be?
Well, it can vary, but I'm amazed. I get really good response with that. And that's lately I haven't been operating a lot, but I have my Tapper 30 meter whisper transmitter on it. And even in the last couple months, you know, I'm getting Antarctica is hearing my 0.2 watt. And I regularly am getting Hawaii, and I'm regularly getting Alaska, and I have gotten a couple of New Zealands recently. And then at the same time, I'm getting into Europe or the Canary Islands.
And this is on what, on 40?
On 30, whisper, and remember, those boards from Tapper are only 0.2 watt, I believe.
So you're on 30 meters and you get, that's pretty good.
It the having a good antenna makes all the difference.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the new property. It'll be about a year before we get there, but it's a it slopes to the north, so southern propagation. It'll be like Nathaniel's antenna pointing into the dirt, going to the south. You're going to the north, it slopes off, so you can put it like on a 40-foot mast at the house, and then by the time you get a 160-meter antenna down there, you're 60 feet up.
Well, that ought to be nice.
So I'm thinking the first antenna I'm going to put up is an inverted L for 160, and I'll use it on broadcast band for DXing, just for fun.
Well, yeah, then you can find out how it works.
Yep, and I'm hoping all the utilities are underground all around me, and there are high-tension power lines, but they're about more than a mile away, so I'm hoping that it's quiet there.
That sounds pretty nice.
Yeah, Nathaniel, I just called you a couple of times on FT8, if you're listening on 40-meter FT8, but now I've got half a dozen people calling me, so I've got to answer them.
Oh, I was on 20-meter FT8. I'll see if I can tune up to 40.
Okay, well, anybody have any other tangerine stuff? It seems pretty light this weekend, but that's okay. We're all kind of getting used to working at home and dealing with this pandemic thing that's going on.
I will give a report for Dave Witten. He's been at home. I see him once a week, or I was seeing him once a week, but now we do a online video. We tested one of those alternatives on Sunday, but I'll probably have a Zoom conference with him on tomorrow. But he's working on the covers for the magnetometers right now. He's in the he's got a lathe in his shop, a metal lathe that he's turning PVC.
Oh, okay. So he's making a box then?
Yeah, he's doing some sort of project where he's trying different kinds of designs for the box for the magnetometer.
Oh, okay. Well, very good. So, at some point I think I want to get the schematic from him so we can productize it, but I want to wait till he's ready.
Well, he also has this development board that he made that he was thinking would make a nice little like STEM project that Tapper could sell. You know, it's basically a magnetometer that you just play with, and you wouldn't put it outside, but you could learn how it worked.
Yeah, so it'd be a local board only, not a remote.
Yeah, and it would be relatively cheap. I think we could probably get the price in the $30 to $40 range.
Yeah, and then you'd hook it to a Raspberry Pi or something, right?
Yeah, or anything that has one of the GPIO buses, and you could play with it. He said he's gotten several requests for those, and he just doesn't have the time or the inclination to make them for people.
Well, it sounds like that might be our first product.
I think it would make a great product if we can do it through Tapper, he and I discussed, well, would it be better to make it a kit, or would it be better to make just it's the board, and then you need one of those PMI, PNI magnetometer boards. The magnetometer board is kind of interesting. It's $20 to buy, and if you bought all the parts to put on, just solder them on your board, it'd be $15 worth of parts.
So it seems hardly worth it to buy the parts separate.
Not right now with the price of those little boards. But the little board is such that if you don't have, you need a bunch of support. You can't just hook to it easily and read the numbers off.
How do you mean? You mean you need software to do it?
It needs some pull downs on some of the lines. And the PNI people sell a $200 development board.
Oh, I see what you mean. Well, so you're saying the little board you have to really plug onto our carrier board, which I think is fine. I think we should just do that.
I think that's a good solution, because then if for some reason you need to switch up, you can just get another baseboard and plug in the PNI board or move it around. So it's a really nice little solution.
So when you talk to him, if he's interested in sending me the schematics that he has, I'll take a look at it and see if we can't maybe do a real quickie on that and get a product going right out the door.
Well, here's a suggestion. I don't know. He's been making all the boards at OS Park, and I don't know if those are public or not, but they're all there right now.
Okay, but what I would probably do is do a layout and get the Gerbers and go offshore.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were going to do that, and I just wanted to... I don't know if you can look there and see his schematics or if they're... if they're private or anything.
Oh, okay. Well, you might ask him that anyway, since he's not here and you talk to him every week, and see if he's interested in doing that, because I certainly would be interested in doing something real quick like that would get those things out to people.
Yeah, those boards are done. The ones that we're using on the project, he would kind of like to do some testing with Holman and make sure that they're giving numbers that make sense.
Well, that's what I'm asking. If he's not ready, then we don't want to jump the gun. But if you know, when you think about it, if it's just an I2C bus, it's like, if you get any numbers at all, then it's really going to be up to the little carrier board, right? I mean, the little board you buy, to be correct.
That's correct. Now, I've got one of these little development boards here that he loaned to me to try and test his software. And we have software that's C software that's running. So I've been running it since... it's been running continuously since the Zoom meeting. So it's pretty stable.
Well, it sounds like we might be ready then. I mean, we can certainly give it a go, but we're not going to go offshore and build 500 of them the first day out. We're going to build some protos, and then we'll give them back to Dave, and that way he won't have to solder all those little bitty things.
Yeah, there's this one part that's the I2C chip. And it's just small enough that it's irritating.
Well, he won't have to have that part on the local one.
He does need it for the local one as well. So it's pretty much all the parts are the same. It's just that it doesn't have the coax or the internet cable on the little board. It's just basically has, what I'm using is one of those quick connectors, SparkFun uses.
Yeah. I don't understand why he needs the I2C adapter or extender if he's going to just plug it onto a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah. I'm running mine off of the, Nano right now, and I was running it off of the Odroid, and it worked fine with either one. So it's just the I2C ports switch between the two.
Yeah, it seems like he could depopulate that and it would be fine, because you talk to that chip to talk to the same chip on the other end that talks to the magnetometer. So if the magnetometer is on the inboard end, then you don't talk to that chip. You talk directly to the magnetometer. This is the way I saw it anyway.
Right. So anyway, I'll talk to him tomorrow and see if that's if he can send you something. Because he's been talking about it as a way to help support Tapper, and it's something that he had to build it to get to the endpoint, and it's a fun little thing to play with, but it doesn't really fit completely with the current project.
Oh, well, I'm not sure I agree with that, because you're right. It doesn't agree with it's not a personal space weather station, but it's a piece of it. And it also would give Hillman a way to, get more than one or two that Dave has to hand build, which I know he has trouble with, because it's hard getting those little parts on there. So if we could, kill two birds with one stone, you know, get a Tapper project out of it and get some made, then we'd be off and running.
Yeah, I will tell you, it's been a real enjoyable project for Dave. He's loved this, and he loved doing the board layouts. That was he went through several iterations, but he really loved doing that.
Yeah, I know. And it's so he could be the first one out with real hardware. That would be great.
Yep.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting.
Yeah, so don't you think, Nathaniel, that if we were to come up with, you know, 50 of these because they're cheap, that Heilman would just be able to have a field day with them, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. It would be nice to make sure the numbers are looking reasonable compared to a science-grade magnetometer. I don't know if we can try and get that tested kind of quickly before we do this, but getting 50 out sooner rather than later would be really good.
I'm just thinking, so if you put this up on the Tapper webpage as like a $40 board or something for people to play with, what are they going to do with the data? Because, you know, we this could be our first data gathering exercise.
Yeah, I mean, even if the data is not quite right, I mean, well, first of all, the data may just be fine. It may be absolutely fine. And even if it's not, it does give us a chance to kind of debug the system and, you know, get a lot of the other things worked out. Just how do you get the data from A to B? What does this thing look like? You know, it could have a lot of really good uses for that.
Yeah, it gets out sooner, so that would help. So, and, you know, who knows? Are there scientific applications that just need a magnetometer?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there are scientific applications that just need a magnetometer. And sometimes you'll have magnetometers set up that you'll use that data, and then you'll still go somewhere else and get data from something else, and you can still put a interesting picture together.
Oh, okay. So it would be useful for maybe not so much for hams, but for scientists anyway.
Yeah, that's right. Or for people who want to learn about, you know, how magnetometers work.
Well, and then it would give Bill some real data to put in his cloud.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you say, put up on the Facebook.
And the little carrier board that I'm using has a temp sensor on it as well.
And don't forget, there is a relationship between the disturbances in the Earth's magnetic field and radio propagation as well. I mean, the KP value that we look at to say, oh, KP is disturbed, so there's a big geomagnetic storm. So that means that high frequency propagation or propagation at the higher part of the HF band is going to be bad. And, you know, you want to go down to the lower bands. That's all measured by ground magnetometers. So you should be able to see, you know, those types of disturbances in there.
So is KP determined by magnetometer only then?
That's right. KP is determined only. It's determined by a network of magnetometers.
Oh, now that would be cool. Okay, so now you got a real use.
Yeah, absolutely.
So looking at what's coming out of mine right now, of course, it's sitting right next to a whole bunch of computers, so I don't know if that upsets it. But I'm getting 290,000 on the X, 1,000 on the Y, and 6,000 on the Z.
How about if you rotate it 90 degrees, what happens?
I just rotated it, and now I get a negative 400,000 on the X, a 5,000 on the Y, and a 6,000 on the Z.
How about if you turn it upwards 90 degrees so that the Z direction points toward the X direction? You get a huge reading on the X on the Z direction then?
So there's a model called the IGRF, the International Geophysical Reference Field, or International Geomagnetic Reference Field. And it's a model that tells you, you give it the latitude, longitude, and altitude, and a year, and it should tell you more or less what the magnetic field you should be measuring. So it'll give you an order of magnitude value for the north, south, east, and west values of the magnetic field wherever you are.
Yeah, it's just that I was concerned that the X was like 200,000 and the Y was like 2,000. Seems like that's is not right. Should be in this... if you rotate it around, you unless you see real big peaks and valleys, you should see things that are about the same magnitude, I would think.
No. I don't think so. So, like, if you were at the polar, at the North Pole, either the North or the South Pole, the magnetic dipole, the total field should be about 60,000 nanoteslas. But that's primarily going to be pointing in toward the Earth in the polar region. So there would be pointing, basically, your down component would be like 60,000, and your horizontal component should be almost zero. Now, when you're at the equator, your horizontal component should be about 30,000 nanoteslas, and your vertical component should be almost zero.
Okay, but so if you have two detectors, one in the X plane and one in the Y plane, it would seem like if you rotated it around the Z axis, you're going to rotate those sensors through the same lobes as each other, depending on what orientation you get.
Yeah, so there would be, you should be able to figure out which way is going to, there will be one direction that will be much, much stronger than the other two.
Okay, and that's what he's seeing. So maybe it's just not oriented right.
Yeah, so a big part of this is going to be knowing how to orient the magnetometer. So usually the X direction is supposed to point toward the magnetic North Pole. The Z direction points vertically down, and the Y direction rounds off the right-hand rule.
It seems like we ought to be able to give the user a guideline on how to orient this thing when install it in their own backyard with using, for example, use your iPhone's compass app and then print something on the board that points towards north. So if you align this board with your iPhone, well, of course, is the iPhone using a magnetometer, or is it using a triangulation with cell towers? Anyway, it seems like we ought to be able to give people a standard way to orient their thing using commonly available tools, so we have comparable readings for different locations.
Yeah, you definitely need to. Now, I think because it's a three-axis magnetometer, any one axis is there's a mathematical relationship that goes between the different axes, and you can rotate it all mathematically. So it may also be possible to just have a person stick it in the ground and have it kind of self-calibrate, and then, just know in the software how much to rotate each of the axes in software to get the correct readings.
Bill, there is a magnetic magnetometer in my cell phone, and Dave and I were comparing two cell phones, and we got putting them right next to each other, we got fairly different values. But I've also worked at work with these ranging lasers for mapping, and it has a magnetometer in it, and the magnetometer basically had to be calibrated daily to get reliable results for compass bearings.
Oh, that's interesting. Nathaniel, what do you think about that as far as being able to use the data out of this thing for anything scientific?
Well, that's where we need to work with Human to make sure that we have a good procedure for doing this. I don't think it's going to have to be calibrated daily by people, but I think we do need to work with Human to make sure that we have an appropriate method for either self-calibrating or getting good information out of it.
Well, you know, it seems to me if you know the lat long of where this consumer grade magnetometer is, you might be able to apply a calibration factor by knowing the current status of the network of high-end magnetometers, so that you could, I don't know, calibrate it that way in software.
Oh, I was talking to Dolores Kip about this, and she was planning to put a high-grade magnetometer in here in Columbia, and she was hoping to do it in April or May, which I think is off it's not, may not happen. I don't know. Maybe it will. And I was asking her about how to calibrate it, and she said she didn't completely know, but she had the person that she was working with would know how to do that. So I assume this other person is like your, like Holman.
Yeah, it can definitely be done. And this, I think the magnetometer that we're using, while it's not the highest science grade magnetometer, it's still orders of magnitude better than what's in your cell phone.
Yeah, but couldn't you still use a cell phone to get a north direction or something like that?
Yeah, to get it roughly. But you would also be able to use the magnetometer in the personal space weather station to get that too, right?
Yeah. I'm just thinking, before we have a personal space weather station, how can we do this? I'm thinking what would be nice would be a enclosure. Maybe you could 3D print it that would be designed specifically for this and have like little tabs, a little, little post to mount the thing on, and have a north with an arrow molded in the top so that you could just put it in the box and aim the box.
Now, where is the data going in the standalone system?
Right now, it comes across I squared C and goes into a C program that's running on the single board computer.
Well, can you have an app for your smartphone that can connect to this and give you a readout of the data in real time and use that to help orient the device?
Well, basically, I have it formatted as a JSON file, and it's just pumping out roughly once a second, and it's been doing that for the last week.
Right. So for trying to position it outside, can you set up a system where you have an app where the person can see in real time where the thing is pointing and know that the thing is actually picking up data, and then they can use that information. They can look at their cell phone and then point or reposition the magnetometer based on what they're seeing in their cell phone.
We could do that. There's a little bit there, but I do want you to know that the magnetometer I have has an N printed on the circuit board. So that's the PNI board.
Okay, but does the Pi that you're using for the computer have Bluetooth?
Right now I'm running on the Nano, but I do think I have a Pi 4 that I'm not using right now that I think it has Bluetooth.
Yeah, because if you hook the magnetometer via I2C to the Pi 4, then you could write a small app that would present the data over Bluetooth to your phone.
Yeah, it'd actually be easier to just do it in like Bill's doing with a web server and then just pick up the page.
Yes, even better.
And I mean, that would be nice because then not only does that let you calibrate the thing, but you're actually seeing the data. You now have a way of seeing the data in real time while you're out in the field, so you know the thing's alive and working, and you can also, it'll also help you point the thing. So I think it has there's a lot of advantages to doing it that way.
Yeah. So anyway, there is something here that if we can get some boards made, we could sell something.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that sounds great.
We'll make up for not getting to go to all these conferences in person.
Yeah, I know we have to do stuff.
Yep. Instead of just talking about what we're going to do.
That's right.
You know, if you did a web server and presented the data on the screen, then that'll integrate really nicely right into Bill's cloud service that can report the data to the big giant head, the cloud server at Scranton.
So, Bill, would just a JSON stream be fine for you, or do you have a specific format?
Oh, JSON is fine. I mean, that's one of the easiest things to deal with.
Oh, Dave's ears must have been burning.
Dave, we've been talking about you.
Well, I should have known. I finally got TeamSpeak to run by brute force somehow. I don't know how.
Well, Scotty's all excited about the idea of producing the little test board, and was wondering where he can get the schematic. Can he read it off of OS Park, or is it hidden?
Let's see. The schematic's not on OSH Park, but I can send it to him. I can send it as a PDF. I can send the whole project to him as a KiCad project, and I can send the PDF and the stuff easily. There might be something good to add, but whatever, I can get it to you tomorrow.
All right, that would be great. And you think it's ready for prime time? Are you ready to produce some?
Very, very nearly. I thought about putting the Grove connector back on it, but that's no big deal. It's just running the pins to that. And it'd be actually, it could go just the way it is.
Okay, that's all we need to know. It works. Then, of course, when I get done massaging it, I'll run it by you again, and we'll see if we can get something rolling fast.
Okay. I thought it would be a nice thing for the people who want to, for people who want to use it for various projects, even other things that don't relate to this.
It looks like there's going to be some extra time here because, at least in our neighborhood, because they've declared a stay-at-home mandate. So it's, as long as we don't run out of food or toilet paper, we're in good shape.
I'm running thin on toilet paper, but I'm going to have to, invoke my senior citizen status and go over. And trouble is, I got to get up early in the morning to do it.
And where's the Sears catalog when you need it?
Yeah. Well, I might have an old DigiKey catalog somewhere that might work.
Oh, yeah, I got tons of those.
Old Lafayette catalogs, those work too, except they're antiques by now.
Yeah, so they're worth something.
Well, we are getting near our time, but I wanted you to, since Dave jumped in there, that he can at least, I had sent him a reminder. I thought maybe he'd fallen asleep or was doing something else, but apparently his software wasn't working.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I couldn't get it on. Some of the stuff we fooled with over the weekend seems to have messed with my server or my CA certificates. And then when I tried it on my Google's having troubles of some sort too. And so I was having trouble on my tablet.
Well, I can fill you in tomorrow when we have our coffee and tell you what we've been doing.
Okay, that'd be great. Sorry I missed out.
Oh my God, Nathaniel, those Lafayette catalogs that you sent the link to, that's how I got started in AM radio with one of those.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I
live
close enough to Lafayette headquarters in Syosset, New York. I could go there on my bicycle.
Yeah, I didn't live that close, but I went to the local one on my bicycle. Go ahead.
I only wished I lived somewhere I had anything like those. That Chicago was the nearest, and the Allied catalog was what I lived and died by.
Yeah, remember when it had a night kit catalog in the back of it?
Absolutely. There were some walkie-talkies my brother and I just would have died for.
Yeah, me and my dad, my dad bought for us kids those the C-100s, the little blue ones.
Yeah.
It never did work right, and they didn't have squelch.
Early days.
Believe it or not, I still have them from the time when my dad and my brother and I built them. I have a pair of them. And they're on channel 7, I think, and they don't net right. They don't, crystals are off.
Do you remember how that when you got a new piece of electronics back in the day, do you remember the smell of it? I mean, that's something that really stuck with me. You got that new handy talkie or whatever it was out of the package, and it had a specific smell of new electronics that was really quite never anything else like it.
Yeah, like a combination of flux and FR4 or it was phenolic, probably the brown phenolic.
Yeah, I think it was the phenolic, the polymer and the phenolic in those old days. And and a little outgassing from any plastics they used.
Yeah, and you remember the smell of your tube type rig when you first turned it on?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had a World War II Navy receiver that weighed upwards of 100 pounds.
And you can still get it up and running and warm up the tubes. I bet it has a smell to it.
Yep.
So I bet Liz would be excited about putting magnetometers all over the place, wouldn't she?
Oh, of course. A lot of people will be.
Oh, I sent the more elaborate boards off, finally got them everything together to send it off to Hillman today, and he should have it in a couple days. First I didn't have his home address, and then I don't know, various things, but hopefully he'll get that soon.
That sounds great, David. Thank you.
Did you get something off to Frankie for putting her new brick on a box on a brick?
No, I don't have another pair of these I can send off. I have the set that I use myself, but they're the first ones I got to work, and a few of the components, well, the little connectors are a little precarious, one thing and another on them, so I was saving them for myself. I don't know whether she... I haven't heard anything more from her, and I didn't know whether she wanted to keep going forward.
I have a feeling they'd want to keep going.
Yeah, at Hamsai, they had that box glued down to a brick that they were going to use to orient the remote unit.
I've done a bunch of work with packaging myself for it. I mean, yeah, that's nice and stable what they've done. I've got, as I probably told you, I was working with PVC pipe, but I have a little cradle made out of foam that lets you position it, and getting down to the final things. I'll send some packages when it's worth looking at.
So it would seem like, and correct me, Nathaniel, if I'm wrong, if you mounted that thing coplanar with the bottom of a box, and then if you took a level and you made the X and Y directions of the box both level, would that guarantee that the center of the Z direction would point straight downward?
I don't know that it would absolutely guarantee that, because it might, but I don't think it will absolutely guarantee it.
Because you want to point the Z direction toward the center of the Earth, not necessarily toward the ground, because the ground might not be level.
Right.
I've got a big old plumbob that was one of my grandfather's. I think he was a plumber or something.
You know, there's a really nice manual. It's old, but it talks all about how to run a magnetometer observatory. I have that in PDF. If you give me a minute, I will find that.
Yeah, because if we do that, if we're going to start sending these boards out, we're going to have some instructions to the people of how to orient it.
Well, Dave was going to write something, but he's busy building things.
My plan for tomorrow morning was to get busy doing some writing.
All right, cool. And you're going to write it up for QEX too, right?
Oh, I wouldn't mind doing that at all if they're interested. I haven't really given it thought.
Oh, I can guarantee you they'll be interested.
Here, take a look at this. Look at number 2 on that link.
Anything written by someone named Suxdorf has got to be good.
Oh, you know it.
That looks like it's more information than you could ever use in your lifetime.
I think it might help answer a lot of these questions.
Should I be able to see that link, or is it touch Scotty?
No, you should be able. Everyone should be able to see it.
It's on the Tangerine tab.
The IAGA.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, look at publication number 2.
All right, that sounds very good. Sounds like a lot of reading I have to do now. So, Dave, if you could send me that stuff off, that'd be awesome. I got to run here now, but great to hear everyone, and stay safe from the onslaught, and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you very much, Scotty. I appreciate it.
Yeah. 73.
To 73.
Yeah, good night, Scotty.
73.
User disconnected from your channel.
Did you get that, Dave?
Yes, I did. I found it. And so I'll be looking at it, see what it has that might be interesting.
That sounds good. I think it'll help a lot. Like if you look, it describes the coordinate systems used for magnetometers. It has a whole discussion on calibration and all sorts of things.
Yeah, that looks like it. There's a lot of questions in there I've been wondering about for a good while.
Excuse me, what are you guys looking at?
So do you see that IAGA link I sent?
You mean you sent it in the chat?
Yeah, in the chat. It's the very last link I sent to www.iaga-aiga.org.
Oh, okay, I see it.
And then go to publication number 2.
Okay. I didn't have the right chat called up. There's multiple ones across the bottom.
Yeah, that's right.
I like the building diagrams of how to lay out your building.
Yeah, this document has a lot of information in it.
Looks like a small book.
238 pages.
That's book length.
You could probably teach a whole course from this.
Hadn't come across torsion variometers or photoelectric feedback magnetometers. I've been reading lots about all of them lately.
Well, it's 10 minutes past our time, so hate to bail out on you, Dave, but I guess I'm going to head out.
Oh, I wasn't wanting anyone staying on for my sake. I'm glad I caught the end of this finally. I've been working madly, so I'll see you tomorrow, and everybody else. We'll talk next week. 73 to everybody.
Sounds great. 73, Dave and everyone else.
Yeah, 73, and we'll catch you on the next time, maybe for EJ Clear.
73, Bill, W2NF Clear.
73.
User disconnected from your channel.